The Trent White Show on News Talk 1430 KASI.
Good Monday morning. Welcome back to the Trent Rice Show on News Talk 1430 KASI. I am your host, and we're here until the 11 o'clock this morning. Thanks for taking the time to be with us on the newsmaker line right now, and we certainly appreciate his patience. We say good morning to Iowa Senator Charles Grassley. Senator, good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'm glad to be with you. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you for taking the time. We should mention, while the senator is with us from Washington, D.C., you were in our neck of the woods not too long ago. You laced up your running shoes and were part of a fundraiser for that freedom flight that that run was just over the weekend.
Yeah, it was a wonderful experience, and I understand they raised some good money for a trip that's going to take place this October, and it's a... It was an opportunity for me to run, yes, lead other people. There were about 100 in the race. It was a 5K. We raised money for the people that have fought to fight our or fight to defend our freedoms and liberties. You can't do too much for them.
How was your time?
38, 39, embarrassing. But you asked, if you, I wish you hadn't asked. I should have told him to tell you ahead of time, because when I put my garment on my wrist and I erased what it was for the Race for the Cure in Des Moines at 34 something, and then to come in at 38 or 39 after a cold winter, it's embarrassing.
Senator, there is absolutely no judgments being passed along, at least from this end of the phone line, because you were out Saturday morning running 5K. I wasn't, so no judgments being passed along here. And I know that, certainly the people who are organizing what will be a third flight for those men and women who've served, when you can put a nice familiar face to everybody like Chuck Grassley's in the race, nobody's going to argue with that. And I know that they certainly appreciate your participation, sir.
Well, I was glad to do it.
Senator, we had news stories from Senator Harkin this week saying that he will continue to push for an increase in the federal minimum wage. He's looking, obviously, at $10.10 an hour. While the senator said that he is willing to compromise on some of these issues, the one aspect that he did not want to compromise or see any compromise on is a smaller increase in the federal minimum wage that would keep Americans earning that wage below the federal poverty line. First of all, what is the reality? How realistic is it that we could see any increase in the federal minimum wage, sir?
I think there's a good chance, if you can get a compromise, for one to get through the United States Senate, particularly if there would be some compromise on the $10.10, which you said he's not willing to compromise on, and something for small business. That will make sure that small business doesn't lay off people that they feel that they can't afford to keep on at a higher minimum wage because they don't have the ability, like bigger businesses, maybe to pass on to their customers, and as a result, not increase unemployment, particularly among young people that tend to have those jobs. Because, getting that first job is so important. Now, working for nothing to get that first job isn't a realistic thing, obviously. But is it better to have a job at 10-10? And the people that are getting the increase in minimum wage have a better life? Yes. But if there's people that are unemployed because of it, is it better to have more jobs at something less than 10-10? Rather than having an increase in unemployment at a higher figure. So Senator Collins from Maine, she's been working on a compromise that I hope we get a chance to have considered and voted on. And there's even some Democrats that would like to have some sort of compromise as well.
And it's interesting you mentioned the numbers there, because as I understand the lay of the land right now, not only would the $10.10 an hour increase need absolutely every single Democrat in the Republic, I'm sorry, every single Democrat in the Senate to say yes, But that issue would also have to find five Republicans, I'm guessing puts the math to 60, that would truly see the thing advance. Are there five Republicans right now who are willing to sign off on $10.10 an hour?
No, I don't think so. But I think you're going to find several Republicans who would be willing to do something less than $10.10, and as long as it does some things to help small business so that they don't have to lay off people or maybe not hire as many people as they'd normally hire. One thing I think you ought to consider, in 1 year, it's gone from $9, maybe a little bit more than $9, was what the proposal was a year ago, to $10.10 this year. So if people that were promoting minimum wage is something less than $10 last year, why wouldn't they be willing to compromise this year just to improve the lot of others and maybe not increase unemployment?
Talk about the differences between this being a federal push. Obviously, this would make it mandatory for the 50 states. But give me your feelings on those states that are doing this in front of the federal government, a conversation that's being had even here in Iowa. Those states that are taking the issue and doing it themselves, does it give those states an economic advantage for the attraction of workers? Hey, we can make more money in these states.
Well, if they need those workers, but I don't know whether you find as much unemployment among people that are lower skilled than you do people that are in manufacturing, as an example. But I don't have those figures in mind, but that's something that we would have to consider.
The fact that Senator Collins from Maine, a Republican, is willing to, is not only willing to, but is working on language that would step down the increase a little bit, I've got to guess that that's going to be at least a glimmer of hope for those who hope for a minimum wage increase. For years, it was a non-starter. It just wasn't even a conversation. I would guess that that's going to be at least some encouragement for folks who are hoping to get above $7.25 an hour.
Yeah. Well, she's very serious about helping people get an increase in minimum wage. She's also very serious about small business, because she's active in the small business arena of legislation. I think even serving on that committee, as far as I know. We may have a procedural problem here more than anything else. Does Reid want to pass an increase in the minimum wage, or does he want a political issue? In other words, will Reid bring up unemployment compensation and allow amendments that give alternatives to be suggested and maybe be adopted? That's a big question that I don't have an answer to yet, but there is a feeling that a lot of things that he has on the agenda for the United States Senate, and I don't say this that I know absolutely what's in his mind, but newspapers have reported that he intends to have very much a political agenda between now and the election, and doesn't necessarily care to get things into law, but wants to do two things. One, to give his own Democrats that are up for election an opportunity to maybe cast favorable votes, and then maybe force votes that tend to embarrass Republicans. And is it product or is it politics that he's interested in? That's something I can't answer.
Well, and looking forward to, especially in those states where there are obviously going to be some pretty hotly contested Senate races, you obviously think about Iowa. You know, how much is the politics entering into what may be a much tighter race than people projected initially, with Senator Harkin retiring from that seat?
Yeah.
We saw, since we spoke last, in fact, it was just a week ago today, we saw the deadline come and go, such as it is, for folks to sign up under the Affordable Care Act. There was a run on the website on a Monday ago. The president hoping to get 7 million people signed up under the Affordable Care Act. I think the White House is reporting, or there are numbers being floated, that number was about 7.1 million. Are you surprised, sir, that with a goal of 7 million people, that we should get to that goal with before that deadline?
Yeah, I'd be a lot more complimentary of them seeking that goal if they would give us figures along the lines of how many of the 7 1/10 million people were previously uninsured. Secondly, the extent to which there are people that just went from one program to another, in other words, not uninsured, and then the extent to which people have signed up, 7.1 million, but if they haven't paid their first dollar, they aren't signed up yet. And those are legitimate questions that we ought to get answers for, and they don't seem to want to answer it. A bigger picture, and then a point of criticism, would be this, that when the bill was passed, there were four years ago, 48 million people without health insurance, and so you got that down to probably a little more than 6.1, but let's add a couple million people covered by their mom and dad's health insurance because they're under 26 years of age, and you've got maybe 3 million people into Medicaid. But if you still have 10 million people and you still got 38 or 40 million people unemployed, it's not much of a victory if your whole goal was to get everybody health insurance.
And I know that Speaker Boehner's criticism also was exactly who it is that's coming into the Affordable Care Act. Are there people who are getting signed up or who were signed up by the March 31st deadline who would have qualified anyway under Medicare or Medicaid? These folks would have qualified. For whatever reason, they weren't in the system. They're in the system now. They're not bringing the new dollars to pay for the program that, say, some, you know, young 25-year-old guy who's relatively healthy and he isn't going to put a burden on the system, but he is going to pay into the system. That's not who we're seeing. We're seeing people who should have been in the system ostensibly to begin with.
Well, then you bring up another point I should have made. Let me clarify. Of the 7.1 million, 40% were supposed to be between the ages of 18 and 34 to offset the health problems because younger people don't tend to get sick. So older people, let's say 34 to 65, that had health problems, they needed 40% of the young people to offset the cost of health insurance and health care to the older ones, and they were only getting about 27%. So that's where you have this increase in costs that if it isn't made up by a lot of young people, like at 40% getting health insurance, then the people that have signed up that are older are going to get big increases in their health insurance. And even young people that did sign up, 27% instead of 40%, they're going to get a big increase in health insurance costs. And those are going to be announced in about 3 months, I believe.
With just a few minutes left, when Congressman King was here with us last week, and he said in regards to an effort to repeal, that it will stay the law of the land through this Congress. It will probably stay the law of the land through the next Congress. Doing the math, that puts us at the Congress that will be elected in 2016, as will what is right now believed to be an open presidential seat. How much does this play then in 2016 politically?
Well, it's going to be a big item in 2014. Will it be as big of an item in 2016? It depends upon whether people are gaining some satisfaction with it. So far, it tended to go down in public support. You know, starting out when it was passed at maybe 50%, down to the mid-30s now of approval of it. People just don't see it as the right form of health insurance. And then the other question is, will the candidates running for president, and this could apply to both Republicans and Democrats, but more apt to apply to Republicans, will they have a good alternative to offer the people in 2016? And that's something I don't know, but it's obvious that that there better be an other alternative. Even Chuck Grassley talks about repeal, not repeal by itself, repeal and revise.
Well, and I remember the conversation you and I had, you know, 4 years ago when so much of what is in the Affordable Care Act was widely agreed to by both sides of the political aisle. You mentioned the kids being able to stay on their insurance, their parents' insurance through 26, pre-existing conditions issues. You wonder how much there still is bipartisan agreement in some of what is already law.
Yeah. Well, we all talk about repeal, replace, and revise. When you get down to it, you can have a lot of ideas doing that. You got to have the votes at the particular time. And my guess is there won't be much revising on pre-existing conditions or maybe kids being on their mom's health insurance until they're 26. If those things are going to be up for revision, the only thing I can offer to you in regard to pre-existing conditions is a very beefed-up risk pool that better than what states had prior to the enactment of Obamacare. Otherwise, you're not going to be credible. And people that get used to being guaranteed insurance, it's going to be one of those things most politically difficult to get rid of.
Senator, we appreciate your time. We know we need to let you go to get on with the business of the day. Thanks for your time, sir. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.